You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We're live. We're live, pal. As I cough, Oh my god, jeez. I almost died on air. Anyway, we're live, pal. Welcome everyone to the I don't know what episode number this is, but welcome everyone again to the A-Side Live Chat. I'm of course your host, Jose Youngs, here from MMAfighting.com. It's officially been 2 years as host of the A-Side Live Chat. I think the actual date was this past weekend, so it kind of fell in the middle of last time and this time, but we're going to call this episode the 2 year anniversary of hosting the A-Side Live Chat. So I brought back the man who was my first ever co-host back when it was just me and one other writer, and we couldn't make it. Wasn't all pretty. There was no lower thirds. There was no, you know, what do you call it? Frames. There was nothing. It was literally just me. I think it was a Google video chat. So welcome back, AK Lee. How's life in, I know it says it's going to say Toronto, but how's life in Markham?
See, Jose, that's why I come on the show. You are a professional who remembers where people are from. Life is great, man. Life's great. I am so excited to be here on the 2 year anniversary of the Jose Youngs A-Side, such humble beginnings. And what a sterling span show it is now. Of course, with the help of producer extraordinaire, EKC Live. What is that? Why is that? No. Why? What is that? No. Come on. Why?
For those of you who are just listening to this and only listen to the A-Side Live Chat, we have a little show on this site called Between the Links, hosted by our own Mike Heck. It is I would call it a game show, probably the top game show in MMA. Kaylee's not very good at it, apparently. His record shows. Maybe he's...
They just put my record on screen. Yeah. For no reason.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the first Godfather, AK, movie?
Of course.
You know when Sonny gets lit up at the toll booth?
Yeah.
I feel like that's how it is when you play between the Links.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good visual representation of what usually happens to me. I think I've been putting up a better show lately. But, the record is what it is.
And of course, the man who makes this show actually pretty, back from the Google chat and Skype days. I think we even did one or two episodes on, I can't even remember what it's called, some software, and it broke my computer and my camera. But Casey Lydon in Englewood. What's up, Mr. Muscles?
Happy Pride Month.
Happy Pride Month. I was going to get to that too, but Casey beat me to it. Happy Pride Month, everyone. He is dressed appropriately.
My only UFC gear.
When I say he's dressed appropriately, he's wearing a shirt with a rainbow flag. Of course, I'm not, you know, I don't want to film on the bus. People that are just listening to this, the only UFC shirt that Casey owns, apparently. I think I own three. I own that one, which is the We Are Fighters, the Pride Month one. I think that was after the nightclub shooting, right? In Florida. That's when it came out around
Orlando.
Yes. And then I have the Australian one for the wildfires that were kind of taking over. The bunch of people giving those out. It says like, and then I have Hispanic Heritage Month. Someone gave me a UFC Hispanic Heritage Month shirt. So I have three shirts from the UFC, and they're all for like charities and, you know, good message and stuff. But no one cares about my t-shirts. Maybe they care about, actually, no, I'll talk about my t-shirt at the end of the show. Talk about my t-shirt at the end of the show. Anyway, you guys know the drill. You can ask questions in the YouTube comments. Hello to everyone on Twitter and Facebook. We've been doing that for a while. Apparently, it's been getting good review, good feedback from the Facebooks and Twitter users of the world. So, Case, without further ado, what is our first question?
Wait, is it Markham? How do you spell that?
It's like Markham.
Markham.
You just Markham. It's like Markham.
Markham. It's exactly like Markham. Yes, without the L. Perfect. Markham. Gosh darn it. Just like Jose said.
Marham. Oh. It just says Marham now.
It's so much more medieval sounding.
Hold on. All right, here we go.
Thank you. There we go. There it is.
It's Mark, comma Ham. You know.
Mark, the assassin. Baby.
Exactly. Anyway, you guys know the drill. Ask question in the YouTube comments about MMA. Most probably be about MMA, but whatever you guys feel like chit-chatting about, we are here. We got no media day again this week, so we'll talk about whatever. Right. There's no media day this week, right? Or virtual media day, I should say.
Yeah.
There's a media day, but not a virtual
one. We're
not there, so. Yes.
Well, that's too small.
Happy birthday, the A-side. Yes, 2 years to the Jose Young's iteration of the A-side. This, of course, dates back all the way to our friend Luke Thomas's live chat, and then it went to the Sean Alshadi, Mark Raimondi days, and then it went to Sean and Co., and now it is Jose and Co., or Jose Casey and Co.
And team. So it's team.
Jose all and right. team.
Here we go. First question. This is a big one. It's the big news today.
Did WWE just release Braun Strowman? WTF? Question mark. So yes, I guess we do have a lot of professional wrestling fans in our comment section and on Twitter. The WWE apparently released former Universal Champion Braun Strowman, Aleister Black, who had just started a program apparently. Who else did they release? Those are the two big ones. Lana. Santana Garrett.
Ruby Riott.
Yeah. So they released those names. Buddy Murphy. It's just Murphy, not Buddy Murphy. He lost his first name. Remember, that's how it works.
I think he's back to being Buddy. Or maybe he is now. I don't know.
Maybe he is now. Anywho, AK, your arms went up in the air physically when this question was pulled up. So, what are your thoughts on Braun Strowman being released? I guess.
Yeah, look, no, this stuff is important because, look, I get it. Well, look, we're not going to dwell too much on the pro wrestling, though this is a combat sports podcast, not just UFC. Mm-hmm. So we do talk about all combat sports organizations, which includes, of course, professional wrestling, maybe the most powerful discipline on the planet. But yeah, it's interesting. You know, again, look, we talk about UFC releases all the time and you know, names that come up and go, oh, I can't believe they released, you know, Yoel Romero, or I can't believe they let Jacare go, or Anderson Silva. I can't believe they you know, they parted away with him. Tyron Woodley didn't re-sign him. So it's definitely worth talking about how, like, no one is safe when you get to this sort of big, when you get to the big, big, big show. Obviously, it's the goal where everyone wants to get UFC, WWE, you know, whichever the organization may be. But 1 second, like Jose, you mentioned, this guy was headlining WrestleManias, former world champion, top guy in the company. And the next, guess what? Your release, your future endeavored. Again, and we see it happen all the time. So yeah, I think this is really big news. Obviously, you know, not necessarily in MMA related, but in combat sports entertainment. Yeah, Strowman really shocking. Aleister Black, super talented. Hadn't really got his run yet with the company. It feels like it was on the cusp of them wanting to do something with him. I admit I haven't been keeping up with WWE that much, but I know that's sort of where he was. And then some of the other names, very talented people. Who knows where they'll turn up. But yeah, I haven't watched WWE in a long time. I'm an AEW man. But the releases were really, really surprising.
Well, I know Braun Strowman was a product. He's one of the few products of the WWE. He had no wrestling experience before signing. Same as Big E. They're in that same boat where you get a lot of these big wrestlers, that big famous wrestlers that were independent wrestlers that eventually signed to WWE and they kind of made a name for themselves in the regional scenes, and then they get to the big show. That was not the case with Braun Strowman, to the point where he tweeted, he was kind of poking fun at independent wrestlers not being able to work much during the pandemic.
That wasn't great.
that's not a great look. So I'm curious how he does, considering his whole wrestling life has been. He didn't even do NXT. He skipped NXT. He learned at the Performance Center and then cut his bones on Raw. Like, that was his big jump. That'd be
with
like...
With the Wyatt family. They threw him in there with the Wyatt family. And they're like, here you go. You're part of a big faction.
He was one of those guys? He was in the Wyatt family?
Yes, he was the fourth. They added him later. It would be as if, like, we've seen that, obviously, like, Matt Riddle and Matt Mitrione debuted in the UFC. But they, of course, had... Like, Matt Riddle was a big... And they both came from the Ultimate Fighter. This would be as if someone got, like, Big E signed NXT, got his... did a lot of work on that, learned how to work on television, and then made his debut. That was not Braun Strowman's case. Aleister Black, of course, former Tommy End independent wrestler from the UK, from Holland and the Netherlands. So I think he'll be fine. I think he'll get scooped up real quick. He also is a very pretty talented kickboxer. He used to post a lot of videos of him hitting mitts and bags and all that kind of stuff. So... maybe he wants to do a little bit of both. That'd be fun too. He has fantastic tattoos. I am beyond jealous that the amount of Paul Booth tattoos he has. Paul Booth is a man that free hands tattoos. He doesn't put a stencil down. He just goes.
I thought he was the mall cop.
Close enough. Paul Booth. I think you're thinking of Paul Blart.
Oh, my bad.
that is played by Kevin James. Good segue. Big time MMA fan.
Combat sports.
Here comes the boom. Paul Booth freestyles tattoos, though. So if you just want like a demonic looking thing and you have no idea what it's going to look like, go to him. But it's like a 7-year wait anyway. Yeah.
Real quick on this.
Go ahead, Casey.
Because I don't keep up with WWE and like kind of the inside baseball of WWE. But like, are these releases based on...
I think the biggest theory that I've seen right on Twitter, because I looked at this pretty briefly, is they've been releasing a lot of wrestlers as of the last few months. Mm-hmm. Usually there's a big clean house after WrestleMania, but like not this many big names in such a short amount of time. They also wiped out the WWE network now that they're on Peacock, and they're doing a bunch of stuff on A&E. They've also taken a ton of past episodes of Raw and footage and stuff off of Peacock. It's like kind of the Attitude Era stuff. A lot of these wrestlers they've been releasing were back when the beginning of the pandemic, when the WWE locked them up for years in massive contracts. I think they're going to sell a big chunk of the WWE. Just my idea. That's what my theory. That's what it feels like because they're trying to get some money back and then sell it. And maybe there's going to be a different product, but I have no idea because some of these don't make any sense to me. Some of them I do get. Like people are very upset about Samoa Joe being released, but he was hurt all of the time. So I get that one.
There's also been some shakeup at the top. It's no secret. Our man Damon Martin was tweeting about it a little bit earlier today. I don't know if I want to name names, start slagging people in public, but suffice to say, there was some change at the top with like a former ESPN executive kind of getting some power with WWE, and they're wondering if he was kind of handing down some like. You know, all to any company. Again, I want to relate to the broader combat sports thing. Is any company when there's new management, it doesn't come down to necessarily what Vince McMahon has to say or necessarily what Dana White has to say. Everyone answers to somebody. So these releases in these companies happen for a reason, right? So Damon was saying that this was someone he used to work for at Fox Sports, who also used to work at ESPN, now works at the WWE, and according to Damon, not fond of this particular executive, and is not surprised that some talented people may have gotten hurt in the wake of this man's hiring. So, guys, how do we get? Let's again to steer you more towards MMA. How do we get Braun Strowman in Ryzen? For guys who are, I know there's listeners who don't care about pro wrestling at all. Just Google Braun Strowman and just look at this guy. I need him in there with like, he's a large man. I need him in there with Akebono. I need him in there with Bob Sapp. I need him in there with
Here's what you do. So,
go ahead.
Braun Strowman, before he was in the WWE, was a high, like he was a decorated strongman. Mm-hmm. What other decorated strongman do we have in an MMA organization right now? So it's only a matter of time before we get Mariusz Pudzianowski versus Braun Strowman. That's how you do it.
KSW. Oh my God, they would kill to have Braun Strowman headline one of their shows. They love Gustav.
I'm all about Braun Strowman versus Minimal Man. Minimal Man's got
sure.
Oh,
let's do it.
Minimal Man would kill him.
I know. It's not even fair. Yeah.
Braun Strowman also has some terrible tattoos. Atrocious tattoos. Don't hurt me.
Anyway, always fun to talk wrestling.
Terrence Leverett on Twitter in celebration of 2 years. Good Lord. Please tell
You're
us
on your own love here, Jose.
Demon Slayer season one and the movie. So
go for it.
No spoilers. I will talk about Demon Slayer ad nauseum to the point where we're going to lose a ton of listeners. And I know our listeners probably don't care about anime, as do my fellow co-hosts right now. Right, so we can chat about it later.
Manga.
This is a good manga. Demon Slayer is basically this generation's Naruto, Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, like that type of thing. It is a very straightforward, like hero's quest with his pals narrative. You know how like you get the group of young people who go on their quest, and there is a end goal, unlike Dragon Ball Z, where it was in arcs and they're like learning like powers and there's cool fight scenes. The animation is fantastic. The movie is to bridge the gap between seasons one and two, which is why it blew up so big in Japan, because season one was so fantastic that when it ended, it went into the movie. So people flocked to go see the movie ahead of season two. There have been some shows that try to do that, like Naruto's tried to do it, Dragon Ball Z's tried to do it. But this one, I think, just kind of hit it on the head where it ended and then the movie came out right away. So if you are into the basic tropes of anime, of the hero's quest and like learning like powers and fight scenes and everything, Demon Slayer is this generation's top pick, I think.
And is this on Netflix now?
That's another reason it blew up over here,
right? They started streaming it. Right. I remember that's when it started.
That's what I'm watching right now. I'm watching Demon Slayer season one on Netflix. And I'm not an anime dude, but I'm halfway through season one and I really enjoy it. It's good.
It's very good. The
action scenes are awesome. I'm digging the storylines. I just met the guy of the boar head now or whatever.
Ooh. Yeah.
It is a, it's a very, it is, but again, if you don't like anime tropes of like, you know, it's very much like, I'm not calling it cookie cutter by any means, but it's very much like the Naruto, One Piece, Dragon Ball Z style things. It's not like if you want lore like Attack on Titan, it's not that.
I'm currently binging on Netflix season one of Dawson's Creek. So if there's any season one, or the whole show, I should say, I've only got through season one. If there's any season one Dawson's Creek related questions, please fire away in the YouTube and I'll answer. Hit me on Twitter. I'll answer privately.
Sing the song.
They changed the song for the Netflix version. Really? They didn't have the rights for the song in perpetuity. So now it's a Jan Arden song.
That makes me mad.
I've never seen an episode of Dawson's Creek, but I know that I've heard the song at least.
It's a show of a time. Let me put it that way.
Who are they?
Holy crap! Okay.
Who are the main? Is it James Vanderbeek? Is that
James Vanderbeek? Katie Holmes.
Katie Holmes.
Four-time Academy Award nominee Michelle Williams and Canada's own Joshua Jackson. Shout out Joshua Jackson. All right, we should talk about some MMA.
At some point.
Oh, thank you, Scott.
Yeah, thank you.
Cry. Well done, Jose and ASI crew. Thank you for all you do. Looking forward to the shows every week. Well, I hope you guys tune in every week.
Okay, here we go. Some questions. Here we go.
Levy.
Not today. Not today, obviously.
Are you guys doing a celebration? So coincidentally enough, the AK's birthday doesn't fall on the 2-year anniversary of the
AK. Yeah, I know. Weird, right? So weird.
Yeah, it's the only day.
Yeah, odd. Yeah,
it's so weird.
It's very bizarre.
All right.
Oh,
Azan Zaman on Twitter: is the UFC trying to get rid of Yair? He has been a very hard fighter to deal with. Thoughts on? Oh, well, we'll talk about that one first. So, recently announced Yair Rodriguez is returning after. Oh man, it's clearly been more than a year. His last fight was the Jeremy Stephens fight, if I remember correctly, right? In Boston. And that was the rebooked fight from their fight in Mexico. Jeremy Stephens has fought like, what, three times since then? And Yair hasn't. I feel like at one point he was on the short list for like one more win title fight. But I feel like the rest of the division's kind of passed him at this point because of the activity. He's now returning against Max Holloway, which I don't hate it. Didn't see that fight coming whatsoever. But it feels weird now that Yair and Zabit are kind of in this weird place where they're not active and now all of a sudden they're getting these big fights. But AK, what are your thoughts on Yair Rodriguez's return against Max Holloway? And is the UFC trying to get rid of him?
Yeah, I like it. I'm a fan of the fight. Look, it wasn't probably my number one choice for either guy, but I'm a fan of the fight. I was sort of into. My Keck had been pushing, wanting to see Max Holloway fight Justin Gaethje, which is a dream fight. Hopefully, we get that someday. But I never really thought. I didn't think that was necessarily going to be next or necessarily happen this year. And then Holloway versus the Ige or Zombie, something like that could have worked too. So there was other options, but. The only reason it's hard to figure out like when Yair was going to get a fight like this is we just don't know when Yair is ever going to get a fight because, again, as sort of is mentioned in the question, there's injury problems. It looks like there's sometimes problems with negotiating fights, negotiating certain opponents. Do I think that this is a way of the UFC to get rid of him? I don't. That wasn't my read of this match at all because I think when you're trying to get rid of someone, you don't give them a fight against
the main event.
A main event.
And if against, he wins, he'll get a freaking title shot. That doesn't make any sense. I don't get it.
You can't be as confident as they might be that Holloway beats him. I don't think Holloway beats him and they would use this in his Houston fight. Yeah. I'm not saying it can't happen. Let me put it this way. If he did lose to Holloway and was released for whatever reason, I'd be like, okay, we kind of talked about at the beginning of the show. Nobody is safe. Fortunately. There could be other reasons. Could be he's a high price tag as well that they don't want to work with anymore. But the making of the match itself, I do not see as like them subtly trying to push Yair. And I think it's a great opportunity for Yair. Good fight for Max, who just wants to stay busy. He's happy to fight anybody. I wouldn't read too much into it. I don't think the UFC is in necessarily a hurry to get rid of out of the El Pantera business.
It's a great fight. I didn't understand the hate for this fight at all. The only weird thing is Max staying at 45, basically kind of just Max doesn't gain anything from this fight other than a paycheck and it's a very tough fight, obviously. I did like the idea of Max going to 55 and just having a fun fight, kind of like, you know, Anderson Silva when he went to 205, just kind of fights like that. While you know the 45 belt is tied up on tough. But that fight rules. Yair's incredibly good. He's still top five. And the idea he's a hard fighter to deal with, I don't get that. I mean, Jeremy Stephens is injuring fighters before the fight. I mean, that seems like a hard fighter to deal with. But I think Yair's, man, it's a good fight. It's a tough fight. Yair's only, who's Yair lost to? Frankie Edgar and... Yeah, that's all. That's the only fight. That's the only fight he's lost to Frankie Edgar.
Yair is... historically difficult to deal with, according to Dana White. He's been cut. Remember that weird time when he was cut because he turned down a ton of fights. He also got a USADA suspension for failing to notify where he was three different times. So he got the three strikes, you're suspended thing. So I'm not saying he's taking drugs. Like, because when he got the USADA suspension, I think you see that a lot of people think he's taking steroids. No, he just didn't update his whereabouts, which is, you know, if they show up and you're not there three different times, you get suspended, and that is a violation. So historically, Yair has been not the easiest to deal with in terms of matchmaking because, A, they've matched him up against the beat how many times? Five or six, and it's just never happened because someone is hurt. He's turned down a ton. Like, after he lost to Frankie Edgar, what's up?
Who do we hear this from, though? Who are we hearing this from?
When I worked at FanSided in Chicago, the MMA, because he trained at MMA in Chicago, a lot of people thought that he would just kind of disappear for a long time. I'm not saying that was difficult, but people just like, I have no idea what he is doing with his fight career right now. And that was around the time he got cut. I'm not saying he shouldn't be in the UFC. He's also the highest ranked fighter not matched up.
Yeah.
Besides Max Holloway. So I don't hate this fight whatsoever. I was surprised that he got this fight because the last thing we heard from him is he hurt his ankle. So he pulled out of the Zabit fight and then he got suspended by USADA. And I thought he would get a lower ranked fighter after coming off of the USADA suspensions, but I don't hate it. I love this fight as a high level mixed martial arts competition. It just caught me off guard because but again, like featherweight is so good. Like if they did Yair Arnold, Allen, I would be fine. Did Yair Edson Barbosa, Yair Giga Chikadze, I would be fine with any of those fights. Just good for Max Holloway getting a paycheck, a big paycheck. It's 5-round fight in Las Vegas, so good on everyone involved.
But to me, the booking of this says just the opposite. When it's the question is, the UFC trying to get rid of Yair? No, you don't put him in a main event against Max Holloway if you're trying to get rid of the guy. Like, this is like, if Yair wins, he's gonna get the next title shot.
I think this person is asking, like, because Max Holloway has looked pretty much unstoppable against anyone not named Volkanovski at featherweight, which you could even argue he beat Volkanovski. We don't need to say that. Maybe this is the last fight of his contract, and if he loses, that's it for him, and they're just out of the Yair Rodriguez game. But if he wins, they all of a sudden have another superstar in their hands. So maybe it's a win-win for the UFC. That's just me speculating because none of us know the actual answer. I'm just trying to rationalize this question that he's asking.
Yeah. If for some reason this does turn, like, let's say Yair loses and he parts ways with the UFC after, we know it's for reasons beyond his performance because he is a top five, top eight featherweight. So the question does have some basis to it.
But we're basing it on is a big if the UFC gets rid of Yair, and they haven't indicated that.
UFC released Cain Velasquez
one time.
Again. We're not trying to rationalize the possibility of him getting released. I'm trying to rationalize this specific question
presented
to us. If Yair is released, it's not because he's not a top five fighter. It's probably for reasons outside of Octagon stuff. Anyway, thoughts on the first tough 29 episode?
Wait, hold on. We have other questions that we're not going to actually. I'm going to go to that.
Okay. And besides, we need to build up to that. Yeah, we need to build up to that question. Because I know we all watched it. I know you guys watched. I know we all watched it. And we all have a lot of.
We're going to get to it later.
I'm excited.
Yeah. But I see a lot of comments going, oh, yeah, he's ducking Zabit. Yeah, you don't duck Zabit to face Max Holloway.
Yeah, he got what he wanted.
Zabit's also not healthy right now. His coach came out and said he was dealing with something serious. Not fight injury related, like health related.
Get better, Zabit. All right. Here we go.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Return of Tough from Muff Daddy. Congrats on 2 years, fellas. In honor of the return of the Ultimate Fighter last night, just curious what season of the Ultimate Fighter, other than season one, you have the most fond memories of. I specify other than season one because that's typically everyone's default. And do you think Tough lives on past this current season? Watching it last night, the concept just seems so dated. I think Tough can still work as a show. They just have to make some major changes to evolve it, especially with the Contender Series being a thing now. So I'm going to let AK take this. Side note, I didn't watch any television yesterday whatsoever. So I missed all the NBA games. I missed the Ultimate Fighter, missed everything. I unplugged and went hiking in Northern Arizona because everyone just needs one of those days now and then. So I didn't do anything electronic related whatsoever with a screen. So AK, what were your thoughts on the return of the Ultimate Fighter?
It's a shame that you were probably thinking about Ultimate Fighter 29 season premiere the whole time. I hope it didn't spoil your outing.
I was on a mountain screaming, "The Ultimate Fighter is back!"
anyone who watches or has seen any of our shows knows I love The Ultimate Fighter. I'm a junkie. I'll admit I probably missed a couple of seasons. I know I didn't see the China.
You missed
the
seasons, one season, not episodes.
I'm not going to lie.
How can you be a hardcore junkie? You just skipped a whole season.
I know. I will not tell people I am the definitive Ultimate Fighter guy, that there's other people who definitely have a more thorough knowledge of the series than me, but I'm pretty good. I know the ins and outs of, I haven't watched all the seasons. I've definitely watched almost all the seasons that almost nobody else watched. There you go. There's a good way of putting it. Tough the Smashes. China? Tough Nations. Tough China is the only one I didn't see, and I don't know if it's on. No, I think it is on.
Which one?
I think it is on.
Which
Tough one? China with Kung Lee and it's called. Else.
Yeah. No, what's
so,
his name?
So Tough China Jane, or the Ultimate Fighter China was Kung Lee was not one of the coaches. He was the Dana White figure. So he was like the quarterback. Was, okay. And then they had two different coaches,
and one was Jang Tae Kwon.
And Halen Na'ao or something like that. He had no UFC experience, and they made him leave after like three episodes. And Kung Lee brought his own team in to coach because it was so out of control.
Anyway,
so, you can go read it. There's a very interesting article on a past Kung Lee interview on MMAfighting.com.
Oh, there we go. Talking about that season. Okay, but anyway, Top 29. I enjoyed it. But for anyone who has been watching the show, the last time it was on in 2018 and any of the seasons before that, it was literally exactly the same. I think one change they made, someone mentioned this in the MMA Fighting comments, was that they added in like more music during some of like just some background. Yeah, because I noticed this too. I don't know if it was just louder or if it was placed in a different way, but that's the only difference I noted, that they had some background music for some scenes where normally it would just be like quiet and people like exercising and doing dialogue and stuff. So other than that, exactly the same. Some people are saying, I saw our colleague, our buddy Mike, he said, it's been the same for like 10 years. And I'm like, no, they've made little changes here and there. Like I like when they get the two fighters who are fighting, and then they go back to show like the footage they filmed before the show, talking about their lives and stuff. I thought there's a very smart reality show type change. They upgraded sort of the quality of the testimonials, like how they look. They did that like back in the John Jones, Chael Sonnen season. So normally there's like incremental but noticeable changes. They literally changed nothing between this season 29 and season 28. If they had thrown this episode into the middle of season 28, I wouldn't have noticed like the difference. I would have been like, oh, okay, this is just the next episode of that season. So that was a little disappointing for me. I know it's kind of cool. I know we watched The Ultimate Fighter for what it is. It's familiar. We understand the format, but just like any sort of change, something would have been nice, but it was very traditional. So again, I enjoyed it, but if you're someone who's tuned out of The Ultimate Fighter, you would have no reason to come back. Nothing new or fresh to drop.
Question. Is this the first season in the Apex, not at the Tough Gym?
Yeah. So that's the difference. The fights are at the Apex. They're doing the training at the Apex. I think that was the one big thing.
They're training at the PI now, right?
Not the PI.
Rather than just the regular Tough Gym.
Yeah. So that's the one thing I think Dana White was kind of pushing at the beginning of the episode during his, you know, classic pre-tough speech, was like, for the first time we got state-of-the-art, you know, facilities for these guys to work out in. It's just nothing but train all day, which I mean is kind of what they did in anyway. They got to show off at the
PI. So like, it wasn't state-of-the-art before. It was just what was it before?
I mean, state-of-the-art is a relative term, Casey. It was state-of-the-art in like 2014. Now this is state-of-the-art for 2020. Why am I doing the UFC's PR? What's going happening right now?
I missed the whole episode.
There's other parts of the question which you guys can probably want to jump on. What's your
Casey doesn't watch The Ultimate Fighter. What's your favorite season, AK?
Oh, my favorite?
Yeah. What's your most memorable season?
Like I said, not including one, like you see, as Muff Daddy said here, one is a pretty good answer. I'm fine with both season 10, the heavyweights, of course, which I think most people would be their number two answer. And I also have a sick part of me that loves season 6, widely regarded as the worst season, or at least one of the worst seasons of The Ultimate Fighter. That was the Sarah Hughes, Matt Sarah, and Matt Hughes.
Yeah.
The two best seasons were... when they debuted the 115ers, when Carla fought
that's one of the few seasons I watched. Great
the quality of the fighters in that house were I think
that's tough.
I think from top 20. To bottom, I think Angela Hill was like number 16 too, like much like Brandon Moreno was number 16 or whatever. I think the quality of those the fighters in that house was just the best. I don't even remember who the coaches were that year. Who were the coaches?
That was Gilbert and Pettis.
Yeah, that wasn't even important. That's one of the few years where like the coaches were not important at all. It was actually about the people and the actual contestants, the fighters. And my second favorite season was because the coaching matchup was real beef and the quality of the fighters were in there were very good, was Bisbing and Mayhem. That was a great season.
Really good. That's That is a very underrated season because that was the debut of the 45 and 35ers.
Yeah.
And those Mayhem and Bisping.
Dillashaw was in it. John Dodson. Yeah. A lot of great fighters in that.
Bisping and Mayhem were fantastic coaches.
Yep.
Like, so fantastic. Good. Like, there's a lot of fighters that you would like. John Jones was a bad coach, but it's like if Michael Jordan was a coach. It's just hard to teach when you're just naturally good at something. I think Tito Ortiz was a really good coach on like the earlier seasons.
He was.
He was. But then like Ken Shamrock, who remember he had like the Lions Den. He was like the best gym in the world. Terrible coach. Terrible coach. So
yeah, couldn't translate that to the show. Yeah.
But it is what it is. Don't know if I'll watch,
The Miller Bisping season is a perfect example of what like them doing something different. Cause that was, Jason Miller had one UFC fight back in the day. He fought GSP. And I think that was it, right? I think he only had one UFC fight, right?
Yeah, one fight.
I could be wrong. Yeah. And then went, of course, fought in other organizations, fully beat down, built up his own brand. It's very, like, cool, kind of, full almost a crossover.
Yeah, this,
like,
was, MMA this, star. Was post, this was post, after he did his run in Dream, after he did his run in Strikeforce, the Brawl, all that stuff.
Yeah. But I love that they brought him in because I'm like, this is what I wish they would focus on, bringing coaches who will be good coaches and good TV personalities, as opposed to just, we have two guys who are set to fight. Let's put, like what we were doing with Ortega and Volkanovski, two guys who I'm telling you could not care less about being on the show. And just because they have a fight coming up, it's like, oh, can we do extra build by having them on a reality show for 2 months, which is insane. No, I'd much rather they go with someone like bring in a Jason Miller, maybe not now, but I'm saying that kind of personality who's like, oh, okay, he's not a big UFC name, but guess what? He knows how to be on TV. Mm-hmm. He knows how to create compelling television. Bring back Chael Sonnen. Put Matt Serra back on TV. I'd love these guys as coaches, but we don't have to worry about a fight. So that's one thing, again, I always harp on them. They should change. But.
So if you could pick someone outside the UFC to debut via The Ultimate Fighter, who would you pick as a coach?
Kayla Harrison.
Damn.
And Amanda Nunes, or whatever, something like that. Yeah,
Kayla that'd Harrison. Be crazy.
That would be very interesting too, because they're both ATT fighters. So you have to try to figure out what goes on there.
Oh, I'll go with. MVP. I think MVP would be a great.
MVP was going to be one. MVP was one of my picks.
Yeah,
that'd be fun.
I think that'd be a fun one.
Kayla, MVP. Yeah. There's a few of them. I'm sure I'm forgetting some names.
I think James Gallagher would be a very interesting one because he's he's a strong personality and he's at Krause's gym, so that's like great coaching staff. And he's an interesting
personality.
People
would be so mad. People would be so mad. Oh, James Gallagher got a coach. How old is he? How old is James Gallagher?
23, 24. He's under 20.
He was at. Oh, he was at. He was at UFC in Houston because he had a bunch. He had like teammates fighting, so he was always around with Krause. And I think him and Krause had to like enter with the public to watch the ceremonial weigh-ins. And I think Krause went up. This is what I saw. Like my peripherals, like James Krause was talking to John Morgan. He's like, how do I get in? He goes, I'm sure they could get you in. They definitely won't let him in. And it was like, cause James Gallagher was in, like they couldn't just sneak James Gallagher through the side with James Krause. Cause you know, Bellator fighter, but he was around.
So yeah. Love. Yeah. Go ahead, Casey.
But back to this question, the season one. Is season one, is it actually really good?
Oh yeah.
Or is it just like overly nostalgic about it?
It's super entertaining.
Because everything is new and that because everything was new.
No, it's entertaining even now.
They also had like weird like contests, like games and stuff.
Oh, so good.
Like they had
nobody got injured. These contests were like really physically they were really physically dangerous. No one ever got injured on the show. I do not know how. But they both also, that and also yeah, go ahead.
The Ultimate Fighter won. If you lost, you left the house. This is obviously
instead of because people forget. Those guys didn't even know that they were going to fight on the show. They all thought, oh, we're going to fight on the finale. Like, it's just two guys are going to make it to the finale and fight for a contract. It wasn't until like a few episodes in where Dana White's like, yeah, you know, you guys, well, we've done some reality show contests, and now you guys could pick two guys to fight. And they're like, what? What we're fighting? Like, how's that even legal?
How's that legal? Like a bunch of people weren't even like on weight. Some fighters, they got voted off, didn't even fight. They just got voted off and they just left without ever fighting. So season one is so funny to watch because of the tomfoolery happening.
Wait, so by the end of the season, were there just two people living in a big ass house?
Yeah.
It wasn't just two, but it was less people. Yeah.
Season three is when they started to keep the fighters around, which is the one big thing.
Like, maybe we should keep them around to help train instead of kicking them out.
Season two, was that famous montage of like, so like the try the workout to get in the house. Cause like, remember they had to like, they were all in the house, but it was like, they had to pick. So instead of having them like show their jujitsu and grappling, they'd be like, go run 10 miles on this treadmill as fast as you can. Cause like they wanted to see that. And I remember interviewing Rashad Evans. I was like, cause this is back when Rashad was still like top of the UFC light heavyweight division. And he was training with Rumble, and Rumble was on the rise, and like, we'll never fight each other. I was like, you have a choice between fighting Anthony Johnson or going through that workout to get on the Ultimate Fighter. What would you? He goes, oh, I'm fighting my team. I'm fighting my friend every day of the week. Because that was so brutal to watch. Like, people were like passing out just to get in the house. Yeah. It was very funny. Yeah,
look, the show now is so much more well organized, so much better produced, just more logical. But man, it is lacking something.
There's no chaos, right? There's no chaos. How about that?
We'll see. I don't know. I mean, it was only episode
one.
It's
so well produced. It's so there. You know, that's the problem with tough. I feel like you can close your eyes and know each exact shot that's going to come next. And that's the problem.
Yep.
There's zero chaos to it. It's like, oh, like, so.
We've talked a lot about The Ultimate Fighter.
Okay. All right. We can move on.
I'm not into it.
Every Tuesday night, people, ESPN Plus, TSN in Canada.
All right. Let's talk about something way more important.
Finally, freaking Paul. Who asked this question? I want to give them credit.
Oh, no. I cut the name off. I don't even know who asked it.
I apologize. I don't know who asked this question. It's on the site. Let's get straight to it. Jake Paul versus Tyron Woodley. I fully expected Jake to box more retired grapplers, wrestlers from the MMA world. However, I have to say this is a very ballsy move. Even Bisping came out and said he was offered the fight. Respect to Jake, who's trying to fight legit guys. However, should Jake have taken a more suitable fight before taking someone on like Woodley? Is this too much too soon? So, yes, for those of you living under a rock, Jake Paul is now going to box former UFC welterweight champion Tyron Woodley. He's also the betting favorite, which I think a lot of people were very surprised at. I guess if you remember what Tyron Woodley has done in his UFC career, you might be surprised. But, like, when's the last time he won a fight?
Woodley?
Was it Maya? No, it was Darren Till. The last time he won a fight was against Darren Till when he submitted him.
His best performance, his best performance of his whole UFC career, too.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. If you're taking if you're taking all of the, like, obviously the Koscheck knockout was fantastic. The Jay Haran, was that his first fight? The knockout was fantastic, but like, it was like a UFC main event, hadn't fought in a long time. Darren Till was the man. He submitted him with a dark choke, got his black belt, and didn't even smile the entire time. He was so frustrated that fight week in Dallas. But yeah, knocks a lot of people out. This fight is also 190 pounds.
That's the big thing to me.
That's the big thing. It's 190 pounds. I don't know the exact rules because have they been announced?
I mean, it's gonna be a professional boxing match. I'm not sure about how many rounds and things like that, but it's not an exhibition match.
And I believe if Jake Paul loses, he gets an immediate rematch. I think I saw that on Twitter. Like, he was trying to add that to the contract. Good on Tyron, because dude hits hard, but I've never seen him in a boxing match. Jake Paul is how old? 24, 25, whatever. And Tyron is a lot closer to 40. It's a lot closer to 40. So this is, I don't understand the confusion over Jake Paul being the betting favorite in a boxing match, considering he's the one that's been boxing and winning and is substantially younger and taller and heavier than Tyron Woodley. I'm very interested. I do, but as I said, Tyron Woodley hits really hard. Like, his overhand is very, very dangerous. So good on Jake Paul for fighting a former UFC champ that hits really hard and is very explosive. I'm very curious to see how explosivity translates to boxing when there's no takedowns. I'm interested in seeing Tyron Woodley box too. But Casey, what are your thoughts?
It's kind of rules for both gentlemen. I mean, Jake Paul. I mean, this is a very tough fight for even was he 3-0, 2-0, 4-0, something like
3-0.
That. 3-0. Big jump up in competition, but it's a smart jump up because he's going to have a big size advantage. He actually has an experience advantage in boxing competition. I don't necessarily think he's actually sparred more boxing rounds than Tyron Woodley in his life, but you know, but Woodley is always the boxing was always still the It was set up around his wrestling. So this could be really interesting to see how Woodley boxes without the threat of the takedown, because that's the whole thing about wrestlers. You don't got to be a great striker. You just got to be a good wrestler, and all of a sudden your striking gets so much exponentially better. No, I take Johnny Hendricks as the best example. He's like, it wasn't that he was a great striker, but like you were so scared of his takedowns that those hands drop and that overhand comes over and boom. So it's a great matchup. I actually like it. And great on Woodley. I'm assuming it's true. Woodley said this is going to be, he expects to make his highest purse he's ever made in his career after losing 1, 2, 3, 4 fights in a row, you know? So, good on Woodley. That's all. I expect Jake to win, but good on Woodley. What I still think is weird from guys like Woodley, and I know they're talking crap, but like I saw an interview, I think, with Helwani, or Helwani posted it, but like saying, oh, I'm going to get Jake Paul, I'm going to get rid of him, you know, all this stuff. It's like, why? He's giving you the highest purse ever. You should like beat him up and go, let's do it again, please. Like, why do MMA fighters want to get rid of guys like Jake Paul? Jake Paul is like putting their kids through college. I don't get it. So
I hate how good Jake Paul is at this, at whatever we want to call this whole, you know, thing he's
called
doing.
It's called being a prize fighter.
Look, I don't like Jake Paul. Jake Paul as a human being does not seem like a good person. That's, you know, that's a usual disclaimer, but as a business person and as someone who's honestly for me generates interest in these weird fights, I'm just amazing. I want to see this fight. I agree. It is such a logical step up from Askren. It's like, okay, so first I beat a former MMA champion, but not a UFC champion, a guy who fought in the UFC. Guess what? So people can say what they want. Oh, you beat an MMA guy, but not a UFC champion. Oh, guess what? Here's a UFC champion. I lined him up. Oh, you fought a guy who's like, you know, retired. He's Ben Askren. He's not in the greatest shape. You know, if someone had never heard of Ben Askren, they just saw a picture, especially the shape he was in before this fight, like not even in MMA shape. People are like, this guy's gonna get killed. You know, most people who were smarter than me were like, this guy's gonna get killed. Look at him. If you look at Tyron Woodley,
he's in
insane shape. He's in such good shape. Yeah. Say what you want again, and being out of his fighting prime, physically and athletically, he looks incredible. I bet there's a lot of things he could still do that most guys his age would struggle with. He looks fantastic. It's such a smart step up. I thought a pro wrestler would be next, but this is even better than that. This is someone who's been calling him out. There's already there's already some build there. This isn't some guy that he started. Like, he's getting called out by a UFC champion. Yeah, and how can you?
And there's a backstory too. There's a real backstory. It's not just a random champion. It's that he was the guy. Yeah. He was in the corner. The guy he just knocked out. They had the locker room footage.
He wasn't even just in the corner. He was the guy that watched Jake Paul get his hands wrapped. Because you know, in boxing,
So
there's footage of him talking all this griefiness with Jake Paul's team, trainer, and he's like, trainers, and he was like, and Tyrone's like, what's your name again, man? Like, who are you? And he's like, I got my titles. I don't even know who you are, my man. So it's, the storyline's there. And good on everyone involved. I understand Jake Paul is just a trash human. And there are some allegations going on in his life that are abhorrent. And if that is if they are true, then he probably shouldn't even be in society. Let's see how that plays out. Good on time.
With what we're talking about that's in front of us, he's so smart. And I'll tell you something. I have no problem with the odds because I said after the loss to Covington, I said, I cannot pick Tyron Woodley in a fight ever again. And I stand by that. I just think that there's an instinct there that is maybe gone or diminished. And when you get in there with guys who are like really trying to, you know, a younger, hungry guys, like again, even like a Jake Paul, you're really going to get hurt. So I'm totally down with the odds. I'm definitely
What are the odds right now? Win.
It's not like crazy, right? It's just favored. It's not like 2-1 or anything, I don't think, is it?
Let me see. Our own Damon Martin had the odds.
Okay, yeah. Take a quick look at that. But if they were, I think 2-1, if they, I don't think they are. I think it's like -150 or something. If they were 2-1, would be a little, 2-1 would be a little absurd, but I have no problem with like a distinct favorite. -150 distinct favorite. I'm like, yeah.
Jake Paul was -130, Jake Paul -155, Tyron Woodley +125.
Okay, so again, a favorite, but not a massive favorite, and that's fine. That's how it should be.
It's interesting because I'm looking at Arawani's Twitter, and he did just a fan poll. So these are MMA fans, and 75% of MMA fans are picking Woodley. So like, they don't do,
because they've seen what he can do, like in an MMA fight, and people are just curious to see how that translates. Like, Tyron Woodley's never been a boxer by any means inside the UFC, but dude hits hard. Like, he took the soul of Robbie Lawler and Josh Koscheck.
He came this close to taking that soul of Luque too. Like,
he came close to taking the soul of Wonderboy in Madison Square Garden. That fight ruled. Yeah. The draw. So, and then the Gaslam fight was whatever. That was a split. Beat Carlos Khan his legs until it ripped in half. So great fighter. I'm very curious. Even outside of the tomfoolery, I just want to see how Tyron Woodley does in a boxing match.
I think this is another smart call out. I don't know. I just can't pick Woodley here. I picked Askren. I picked Askren. If anyone wants to remember, I picked Askren. So I've learned my lesson.
I think the idea that Woodley is shot or whatever is, I think that's really overplayed. I don't know. I don't think he's top 10, but I still think he's a top 20 welterweight for sure. I mean,
I don't think he's shot. Like, I think it goes to
he's lost to. He's lost to top five guys.
I think it goes to what AK was saying earlier. Something just happened. Like, I don't like, he just finds himself stuck against the fence. And like, we're all watching them. Like, why isn't he punching? Why isn't he doing this? And even Tyron Woodley said that when he lost to Kamaru. He's like, he had a lot. That's where he knew what to do, but his body wasn't doing it. So I just think there was something there. He also fought a bunch of specialists in a row and then had to run into Kamaru Usman, who's a pretty well-rounded MMA fighter.
Might be the greatest welterweight
ever.
Damien fought
Stephen Thompson back-to-back and then Damien Maia. You kind of know what's going to come with those guys. And then even for that Robbie Lawler, you're not really worried about a takedown from Robbie Lawler. Same as Darren Till. And Darren Till did that. It was like that lead jab uppercut that he does a lot, and Tyron Woodley goes, I know this is coming. Does he miss? He just timed it perfectly in that half second window. Usman, Burns, Covington, Luque are much harder to game plan against, obviously. But good on him for getting a bunch of money. Prize fight is the name of the game.
What's going to be another interesting factor about this? This isn't a thriller fight. This is going to be a Showtime boxing fight.
Showtime.
This won't be the circus, you know, that everyone's complaining about. This will actually be. I'm interested to see what the undercard is and everything. We'll find out soon. But it's going to be a thing.
But the Black Keys. Doja Cat.
Major Lazer.
Mount Westmore.
Yeah.
Man, I need that spectacle.
See, look at as soon as Showtime Boxing is like, they have a boxing match and they bring out another boxing match. We're like, what is this?
whoa! Settle down with the boxing, guys. Take it easy.
Yeah.
By the way, that question was from MMG2K20. Sorry. So thank you.
Thank you for the question.
This is part two to this question from another user.
What kind of legacy will T-Wood have if he were to lose to Jake Paul from Four Corner Sports NY? I think in the MMA world, everyone kind of considers him top five welterweight ever. I don't think he's top two. I think the top three are GSP, Usman, and then you kind of get Matt Hughes, Tyron Woodley conversations in there. I think if it's just MMA, Carlos Khan, it has to be up there as well. Just in terms of his career achievements in this sport. But in terms of what T Wood, I think it depends on how he loses. If he goes out there and loses in 35 seconds to Jake Paul, not the best look. But let's see how this plays out first.
I'll say no change. No change. I don't think Askren's loss affects. I mean, Askren has maybe a, has. No, I don't think Askren's loss affects his MMA career at all, or even his combat sports career. No, I don't think so. I don't think any effect. That's my
Ben Askren, for all his accomplishments in combat sports, I don't think any fighter has been seen knocked out more in combat sports history than Ben Askren. Combining the Jake Paul knockout with the Masvidal knockout, we've never seen a fighter get knocked out more than Ben
even
Askren.
the first minute of the Robbie Lawler fight. If you just took that clip, it's like this guy gets hit a lot.
if Tyron Woodley loses Jake Paul, say he loses badly, does in terms of legacy, which legacy doesn't mean crap because legacy doesn't pay your bills, but if we're talking about legacy, does T-Wood run into this kind of Hidden Brow area
Oh, people are already doing that. People are already doing
where,
that.
Like, they're you just saying, really oh, just, how, remember Hendon Brown was Howard Brown best? Yeah. And now he's just like, Hendon Brown wanted to be in the Hall of Fame. He's not going to make the UFC Hall of Fame because of his post-championship, you know, dip. I don't think, even when Hendon Brown was champion, he was like, best ever. But as soon as he loses, like, he's forgotten about. Is T. Wood in this area?
Casey, people were doing that after the Gilbert Burns fight, man. People were going like, yeah. But how good was he really, though? How good was he? Did he really face anyone like that good? Like Damian Maia's older, only grapple. Stephen Thompson's, perfect matchup for Woodley, which is like the opposite of what people were saying like before they fought. Thompson was a perfect matchup for him. But, I think that's just classic sort of MMA reductionism, right? Is when we see guys start to lose, we look back and go, I guess they weren't that good. I guess they weren't that good. So
that's every sport.
This is true. This is every sport, but it happens really fast in MMA.
Yeah, like
in combat sports in general. As soon as you lose, people are like, well, "Were you ever really relevant?"
Yeah,
it's a shame.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, man. We had a lot of questions on Jake Paul and Woodley, but I'm gonna skip those and go to this one.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Kevin Lee's move up to welterweight from Tristan Gordon on site to MMA Fighting. What do you think of Kevin Lee moving up to welterweight to face a fighter like Sean Brady? Lee said in a recent interview he'll take Brady's spot in the top 15 of the welterweight rankings and will use his past experience, which will make the difference in the fight between the two. Do you think Lee will work his way up in contending for the welterweight title down the road? So it's, yes, for those of you who aren't aware, Kevin Lee is moving up to welterweight again. I think this, how many fights has he had at welterweight? He's fought RDA.
That's only the RDA, wasn't it?
Is it the only RDA? Well, an RDA is basically a lightweight. That
yeah,
did,
so
a weight.
He fought a lightweight at welterweight.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sean Brady is a legitimate welterweight prospect with extremely high-level grappling and some of the best tattoos you'll see in MMA. Props to Kevin Lee. Dude doesn't take easy fights whatsoever. I mean, he like I said, Sean Brady is physically an actual welterweight. He's also a prospect. He's in the prime of his physical career. I've watched an interview with Kevin Lee from the Schmo and Helen Yee. I don't know if you saw even like clips of that or whatever. Kevin Lee looks huge, like much bigger than he has. I feel like he's been taking this last year to just get physically bigger to move up to welterweight. But AK, what are your expectations of one Mr. Kevin Lee at 170 pounds?
Not super high. I apologize to my cousin, Kevin Lee, super talented guy. And I'm glad I had not seen him recently, so I did not know how much he's been bulking up to get to 170. That's good to hear that he's had the time to do that. But even then, I understand guys being able to bulk up, but there's always still a sort of functional ideal weight that you can compete at, and you can manipulate your body all you want. Once you hit a certain threshold, it's kind of, you're not going to get the results you want. Like I'm an expert on this sort of thing, but this is just based on sort of anecdotally what we've seen in the UFC and when we've seen guys go up in weight class. So you can have some success. I mean, it worked out for Robert Whittaker. Robert Whittaker, I would say, is not a big middleweight. And he made it all. He won the UFC title. Gilbert Burns is a guy who did not love making 155. So him moving up to welterweight probably made sense. But also, you know, not a massive welterweight. And there we go. He just competed for the title. So could Kevin Lee follow a similar arc? I don't know if he's quite as well-rounded as some of the guys we just mentioned. I do always look at him as a grappler. I know he has striking. He had that great head kick of Gilbert Gillespie. Of course, you don't do that by having mediocre striking. But yeah, I don't know. I could see him... I don't see him working his way to a title shot. Maybe fighting his way into the top 10. Yes, I think Brady is a nightmare matchup to try and do it. I respect him for taking it because Brady is ranked right now, undefeated, 14-0, number 13 ranked in the UFC right now. So that'd be a great spot for Kevin Lee to jump into. Even though, and Kevin Lee, I think himself is 11th or just outside the top 10 in the lightweight rankings. So matchup wise, again, everything makes sense. I'm favoring Brady heavily, but I do understand the logic on the Kevin Lee side for deciding, okay, I'm going to go with a guy who doesn't necessarily have a big name, but a lot of people are talking about him. And if it's a grappling matchup, I think I can beat him. So yeah, I have no problem with what Kevin Lee is thinking here. I just don't necessarily think it's going to go his way.
You know, it's interesting. We were kind of talking about, you know, Kevin Lee versus Sean Brady, the prospect. They're the same age.
Yeah.
I think it's just wild. They're the same age. Like, Kevin Lee has just been in so many high profile fights at such a young age that I was actually shocked when I saw Kevin Lee is only 28. Like, actually, Kevin Lee is like right in his athletic prime. He's getting it right now. Yeah, he lost to Charles Oliveira, you know, sometime last over a year ago. Oh, yeah, over a year ago now. Man, it's a great fight. I like this. I like Kevin Lee going up. I think, you know, all those years at 55, he's just gained a lot of technical, you know, experience, you know, with his wrestling, just learning all the MMA skills and techniques. That I think now he doesn't need that strength advantage maybe going to 55. I think all that technique now, he can just focus now just – fighting his best rather than making that 55 weight. So super excited. I love vet versus prospect, even though they're the same age. But yeah, it's cool. I don't know who's gonna win.
Kevin Lee had already had two UFC fights when Sean Brady just made his pro debut in general. Yeah. Sean Brady was 0-0 and Kevin Lee was already in had two, three fights in the UFC. So yeah, we saw his growth in the UFC. And let's not forget, he got full mount on Tony Ferguson at one point in that interim title fight. So fantastic fighter. I would love to see a rematch against Michael Chiesa at 170 down the road. So their first fight was at 155. That was when Chiesa got caught in that rear naked choke. And was it Mazzagatti? Whatever referee that has like never reffed again in the UFC because of whatever that weird finish was where he said he was out when he wasn't. Yeah, then who else has he lost to? Tony Ferguson, Iaquinta twice, both of those fights, whatever.
Yeah,
Leo RDA, got former him. Champ.
That was kind of an upset loss, you know, one of those things that just happened, but that was a while back.
Which one? Santos?
Leo, yeah, Santos, yeah.
Yeah, that was also, yeah, he was also super young in that. And then Charles Oliveira, current champ, RDA, former champ. So only losing the best of the best. And he looked like a world beater against Edson Barboza. Like, he took it to him in that fight. And then he got on Bambi legs after that head kick. But,
and he came back and won. It shows that
came back and won.
How tough he is.
There was a point in time where, like, Kevin Lee wanted to fight everyone that no one wanted to fight in their backyards. Like, remember when Gregory Gillespie was, like, the man at 155? He's like, I'll fight that dude in New York, where he's from. And then he won. And then we asked him, like, who do you want to fight? He goes, I'll fight Islam. I'll fight him in Russia. Like, I don't want to fight him anywhere else besides Russia. And then Charles Oliveira can't get a fight. I'll fight Charles Oliveira in Brazil. So it's like Kevin Lee is he's never going to turn down a challenge like this. So yeah, all props to the man. And I love the fight and can't wait for it. It's also on the Conor McGregor Dustin Poirier 3 card. So a lot of eyeballs on this fight.
Huge opportunity. And I was just listening to Sean's interview on What the Heck the other day. And he was originally going to be on some random fight night in like August, and then it got moved to the July 10th card. So big difference, big win for him and Kevin Lee.
Cool.
2022 heavyweight, 1 year from today, who will be the champion/number one contender be this time next year? So we'll hit these rapid fire. So 1 year from now, who will be the UFC heavyweight champion, AK?
Francis Ngannou, and the number one contender will be John Jones, just like it is now.
Agreed.
I'm just going to say it. I agree with you, but I'm just going to say it to be different. And I bet Stipe can get his title back because he already beat Francis once before. Why can't he do it again? Everyone seems to just think Francis has Stipe's number when they're 1-1.
I think Francis.
That's fine. That is completely fine. I also said I think Francis will have the belt, but I also am not counting Stipe out from getting the title back. Because what it like Dana White already said, Stipe will get the winner of Francis and Derek Lewis. So I still want to see Stipe Francis trilogy. I just
want to
see it.
I want Stipe to get a win before he gets that. I don't know.
I still think Stipe could be the second best.
Who could Stipe fight? Who should Stipe fight? If they're going to give him a drug rematch. See, that's a fight. Yeah,
I'd love that. I know. I don't
if
think
we can,
they're
going to Velasquez.
If we can't do John, if we can't do
bring
John
Cain
Jones
Velasquez,
because of the money thing.
Stipe bring Cain Velasquez.
Braun Strowman. I just don't know if he can make 265. That's my real concern. He's pretty big. I don't think he can cut the 265.
Who's Cyril Gane fighting? Volkov? Maybe the winner of that.
That would be great. Yeah, I would love that. I wish I'm kind of on the same boat that Jed's on, just not as rude about it about Stipe. But I've never been the biggest Stipe believer. Nice guy, great fireman, and you know, all that stuff. But never been the biggest Stipe.
Volkov and Cyril Gane have very high level of technical striking. They're not really known for their touch of death. And I feel like Stipe has fought a lot of people that will just knock you dead. And I would love to see, and just stylistically, I want to see Stipe against someone that can just like, you know, have a high level kickboxing match with him, like Volkov or Cyril Gane. I just want to see that fight, either of those fights in general. Anyway, speaking of heavyweight, where do you see Rozenstruik and Sakai this time next year?
Rozenstruik will be headlining a fight night show against Derek Lewis. Sakai will be one of the favorites to win the 2022 PFL heavyweight tournament.
Wow.
I predict big things for both of them.
That's a bigger paycheck for Sakai.
There you have it, folks. Where do you see Tom Aspinall this time next year?
Oh, that's a tougher one.
Who did you just beat? Was it
Arlovski?
Arlovski. Okay.
Submitted him.
Yeah, I don't know. I see him.
He's really good. He's really talented. So talented. Like, I gotta look at the rankings.
Tom Aspinall versus Stipe after Stipe loses his rematch, his trilogy fight.
I would like to see Tom Aspinall fight Dawkus. I think that'd be a fun scrap. Two heavyweight prospects.
Yes, I agree. I really want that one.
Or if you just want like eyeballs or like a fun selling fight, the winner of Tai Tuivasa and Greg Hardy. Tai Tuivasa is obviously a character. The UK versus Australia rivalry is already there. And then I think Aspinall is such a young, high-level mixed martial artist. Just give him to Greg Hardy again if he wins. So, sure, those fights are fun too.
I'm copying out less specific with this one. Firmly entrenched, though, in the top 10. Top 5, I don't think so. So I think he'll be in the 7 to 10 range by this time next year and really holding that spot down.
All right. Two things. Why does it say your name, cities, but AK's is country? And secondly, Jose's hair looks sick as fuck. Thank you, Jessica. AK just represents Canada.
Yeah, okay. I didn't even notice that. What happened to Mark Ham? What happened to Mark Ham?
He just represents Canada. Like, that is his. Like tell me about AK. Would just say Canada.
Just like the Raptors. Oh, everyone in
Casey represents Raptors. America, apparently. Exclamation point. Not the United States, just America.
America. Exclamation point.
AK's is Mark Ham, Canada.
All right. Thank you, Jessica Crystal crew. Oh, man. Good to have Jessica back. I haven't seen her in a bit. All right, we're gonna finish off with we hit an hour, so let's finish off with this question.
Quickies from Andy Burton. How do you see both Lima and Amosov and Jackson versus Daly going?
Ooh, I like both those fights a lot.
Damn, that's a good question.
I love Dougie Limes. I think he's the second best welterweight in the world behind Kamaru Usman and Amosov will give him a tough fight. Lima will win a dominant decision.
Casey, your homework for the next week is to come up with a food themed nickname for Amosov.
Okay.
Apparently, you can. You can't use his first name because Douglas Lima needs to be shortened to Dougie Limes, apparently. And then Jeremy Jackson.
Charlie Olive.
Jeremy Jackson. Jackson versus Daly. Oh, man.
I'm going to go. I love Paul Daly. He's like just been one of my favorite fighters for his entire career. Yep. But Jackson looks great. I thought he looked great against Neiman Gracie when he defeated him. Even he almost had his eyeball ripped out by the cage, and he still came back and won. I'm gonna go Jackson.
Looked great against Benson. Looked great against Benson too.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm picking Jackson, because I picked him to lose both those fights and he won both those fights. So might as well get on the Jackson hype train now. I also pick Douglas Lima to win because I selfishly need to see Lima versus MVP part two.
Yes.
yeah, I'm going Lima and Jackson.
How do you see the middleweight matchups between Tilla Brunson and Costa Cannonier going? I'm picking Brunson. I think Brunson and Paulo Costa will win. Brunson and Cannonier. That's what I'm picking.
You have to go with your crystal guy. I saw that. I saw the change in your eyes. Yeah. I saw that. Sort of Jessica Crystal Crew chimed in. You're like, oh, Jessica's watching. We better go with the crystal guy.
I'm not. I don't think Jessica's big on the Jared Cannonier train after
looking at anymore.
He jumped off. He's off the crystal crew.
Social media activity. Till versus Brunson. I always pick Brunson. So yeah, I'm going to pick for him. I think I need to stop doubting him. He's a very good fighter. And I also like Paulo Costa. I think he's better than a lot of people think. We just talked earlier in the show. He had this one embarrassing loss to Israel Adesanya, and now everyone's was he really that good? And yes, the man threw down with Yoel Romero. The guy's very good. So I do like him too. I do think he's got a little more power than Cannonier. I think underrated as far as technique as well.
Why? What's wrong with Cannonier? Who's he lost to?
I like him
at middleweight.
I don't know who's he lost to middleweight.
Rob Whitaker. And he shattered his arm in the first round.
That's not,
I don't think Costa
not a bad fighter to lose to. Not a bad fighter to lose to. Yeah, but that's not. I mean, that's a twisted form of MMA math, Casey.
No, I'm just saying. Like, I don't. Why are you hating Cannonier? Why are you hating?
I'm not hating Cannonier. I think Costa. Like I'm defending all the Costa hate. I think Costa's reputation took a big hit after the Adesanya fight, and I think people are forgetting how talented and how good he actually is. I think he'll bounce back. I think he wins.
Is this sober Costa? Is that what we're doing? Or is it the Costa?
Yeah, exactly. Too much wine.
Yeah,
too much wine. Come on.
What is an interesting question to wrap it up? What is the poster of the year so far? What are your thoughts on MMA posters in general? Personally, you think they have looked awful recently. The Gon versus Rosenstrike one was trash. Same for the Ige Zombie, and whoever made McNuggets versus Poirier is being straight up lazy. So this person only brought up UFC posters. If you want to go see a how-to on MMA posters, go look at every single Ryzen poster.
That's all you got to do.
They freaking rule. I was a big fan of the Zombie Brian Ortega. I was a big fan of that one because it was like green and it just looked different from past fights.
The recent Ryzen poster is
awesome. I'm having to look these up. These posters are so nondescript. I'm literally like looking up all these posters. Like I just want to try and figure out.
There were a few that were good.
We don't have to talk about necessarily UFC. It didn't be UFC.
I was a big fan of the UFC 218. That was Holloway Aldo 2, because that was also sponsored. One of the main sponsors was the new Thor movie that came out. So everything was like dark blue, except they had like neon yellow would like highlight certain aspects of each of the four fighters. So like, you know how Ngannou has like that lightning bolt in his head? So it was like a dark reddish blue Ngannou with like a big neon yellow lightning bolt in his head, and Overeem had his yellow lines on his forehead. So I thought those were fun. I also obviously selfishly liked the UFC 181, which was the comic book one. That's the, I can't remember who the artist that did it. Made basically just a comic book poster for a comic book cover for Hendrix Lawler 2 and Gilbert Melendez versus Anthony Pettis. And then I really liked, and I think it was perfect, was Overeem Lesnar, because it didn't have their fight stats. It had their physical. So it was like 6'5", 265 pounds, sized X fist. And then it had like Overeem and Lesnar standing, and it just looks like a freak show fight, which obviously kind of was. But I liked that one because it was billing just two behemoths of men just fist fighting inside of an octagon. So that one's very simple.
Let me show you. Oh, I found it. Let me show you. This is the most recent
Ryzen. Hold on, Pear.
Ryzen poster right here.
Well, I'll describe it. Okay, so great. For our podcast listeners, it's a beautiful shot of the Tokyo Dome. It's like a nighttime shot. It has a Tokyo Dome sort of at the end of a desert like valley, and there's like a comet like streaking across the. It's very cool looking. So you guys can look. This is Ryzen 28 poster. If you guys want to look this up.
And the reason why this poster is because the story is Ryzen is going to be the Tokyo Dome, normally at the Saitama or different venues around Japan, but they're going to be the Tokyo Dome. Unfortunately, I'm pretty sure this event got moved or canceled because of pandemic. Unfortunately, because cases went up and all that. No.
Yeah, but it looks really nice. It's such a cool mystique to it. Yeah.
No, I can say I've been to Tokyo Dome, and this is photoshopped. This isn't how exactly how it looks in front of Tokyo Dome. So if you go to Tokyo and visit this arena, it doesn't look like that.
Yes, I can testify. It is not at the end of an apocalyptic wasteland. It is actually part of like a park, like a sort of a big city park thing. What's it called? It's like Tokyo Park or something.
Yeah, Tokyo Park. There's an amusement park. There's roller coasters right near it, and
it's beautiful.
And Korakuen Hall is right next to it too. That's where they have a bunch of all the crazy wrestling and shudo, pancreas, everything is at Korakuen Hall.
I'll just shout out
TGI Fight Fridays.
Circus. There's a TGI Fight Circus Fridays posters. Right there too.
The best fight posters. Who was the Pride 10 one that had Sakuraba? Remember, he was in the rear naked choke. That woman had him in the rear naked choke.
Shirt. Yeah, yeah.
That one's fantastic.
Is the woman not supposed to be his wife or something?
Something like that. Because there are two. One of them, it's like her in an apron, like smacking him around. And the other one is Dream 6 is the best, I think. That was the tournament. So. Yeah, okay. Dream 6, I think, was the best because the fighters were in a bracket, but it was their whole bodies.
It was like, it was almost like toys, like you kind of snap out a little plastic toy figure.
That one absolutely ruled. But yeah, Asian fight promotions do it right.
Yeah.
Go
back to the question. Yes, UFC poster making is straight up lazy. But you know what? Blame one person on that. That's Dana White. He chooses it. It's his. He runs the company. It's his promotion. If they want lazy posters, that's on them. But yeah, whatever.
Hold on, Casey. Can we throw this one up quickly? This is for. I guess I need the link, and I'll listen to the link in Slack right now. If I can get my freaking. This is a Fight Circus was promoting a phone booth fight, which unfortunately did not go through. There was COVID. Not the event fight itself went through. The event was unfortunately postponed because of COVID. Let me just shoot this over to Casey. So this is a pretty cool poster. I don't know if it's like an homage to something.
That is nice. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a movie. If you can throw it up there. And I'll describe it again for people just listening. It is just a graphic of this open phone booth. And blood is like spilling out of it. Yeah, if you guys just Google, I got you guys listening, Fight Circus 3 posters. They make a few movie posters, I think, style posters. So this is one of them. So hopefully they will have this fight go down sometime in the future. It is supposed to literally, I think, be two Muay Thai fighters stuffed into a phone booth, like in the crap out of each other. There we go. And that's, some people watching now can see it.
That is a cool
And it
poster.
Says, from the creators of Kicking Only, Human Cockfighting. And then there's a tagline as well. It says, call 1-800-COLLECT. Teeth.
Oh,
so there you go. So dude, we can do better.
Rules.
UFC, we can do better.
1-800 collect teeth. Dear God.
Oh my goodness. This is and they even designed it like it looks like a VHS tape that you see like a Blockbuster video. Oh wow.
Which is the only place you can probably find Fight Circus
right next to the Faces of Death videos and right UFC and UFC 1. UFC 1 through 20. That's a great poster, man.
Love it.
Anyway. You know what posters also are sucking a lot lately? I'm disappointed. Bellator. They're not even trying anymore. Now their Bellator posters are sucking. Come on.
Do they really have posters?
They've had cool posters. Like when they have big events, they've had cool posters. They have. Uh-huh. But lately they've been just kind of calling it in too. So bum.
Anyway, that's it for the show, right? Because we ran a little long, or do we have more?
No, we're good.
We're good.
Happy anniversary. Can I say happy anniversary again, Jose? Because let me tell everyone something. I know, Jose, when you first started having to do this, you got kind of thrown into it. You take over. It was a lot of technical difficulties. It was a freaking nightmare, but you stuck with it. Okay, Jose Young is one man. I don't say one man show. Obviously, I see you helped as well. But these guys stuck with it and got the show together and got a bunch of great guests over the last 2 years. And I'm super happy to work with you guys and to be part of this 2 year anniversary, because I do remember what a struggle it was at first and how good it is now. So congratulations, my friends. Yeah. Well done. Good work.
If you want people on the show, just tag them. We'll try to get them on.
Yeah.
On Twitter. Casey, what do you got to say?
I don't know. Everyone be nice to each other. Enjoy Pride Month. I don't know. Go hug your friends. Get vaccinated. You know, then hug your friends. Oh my God, I hung out with people. I was in a room with like six other people. We're all vaccinated. We're just talking. I was like, this feels crazy. I gave each other a hug. We hugged each other when we left. It was like 2019. It was amazing. Had a wild
week. I'm going to close it by saying I want to plug this shirt that I'm wearing. It's called comicbookforkids.org. You can go on their website where they tried to provide children, and I stress children-friendly comic books to children in hospitals and cancer centers throughout the United States and Canada. So if you're in Canada, you can also donate your children-friendly comic books, or you can just go on their website and hit the donate button. Sometimes they get, if a publisher company has published too many comic books or they have too many copies of certain comic books, they will give them to hospitals and cancer organizations to give to children who are stuck in the hospitals and want to escape into the world of the enchantment of the mind of comic books. So that is comicbookforkids.org. Go buy a shirt, go donate some comic books, or just go and donate some money in general. It's for a good cause. It's all over the country of Canada and the United States, started in Chicago, but it is a fantastic organization. Check them out. And with that, we'll see you next Wednesday on the A-Side Live Chat. Fights are back this weekend. We got UFC on Vegas 28. Is it 28? 28, maybe? Yep. 28, 29? Yes. And then, of course, we have Floyd Mayweather versus Logan Paul happening on Sunday in Miami. Sunday. None of us are there, unfortunately. I believe it's Sunday. So
it is Sunday.
Watch those. If you don't want to watch those, we'll have all of your coverage here on MMAfighting.com. But until then, we'll see you next Wednesday. Bam.
Happy birthday, AK.
Nope.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.